Thank you for standing by. This is the conference operator. Welcome to the Aurania Resources Limited quarterly update conference call. As a reminder, all participants are in listen mode only, and the conference is being recorded. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To join the question queue, you may press star then one on your telephone keypad. Should you need assistance during the conference call, you may signal an operator by pressing star then zero. I would now like to turn the conference over to Dr. Keith Barron, Chairman and CEO. Please go ahead.
Well, hello everyone, and thanks for joining us today. We're at a very, very exciting point in your company, our company. We're just cashed up. We have two drills turning right now, and we believe we've made a very, very serious new discovery at Tiriashimpia. And in fact, this morning, just as a teaser we threw out there, we mentioned that we found more mineralization of the place that we call Shimpia North, and I'll let you draw your own conclusions as to how that relates to Tiriashimpia itself. But anyway, things are looking really great, better than they ever have before, and I'm very, very happy, and we have lots to talk about today. So I'm going to hand it over to my co-presenter here, Dr. Richard Spencer, the president of the company, and he will take you through the presentation. Enjoy. Go ahead, please.
Thanks very much, Keith, and thanks to everyone for joining the call. During this presentation will be relatively short. I want to try and emphasize the Q&A session at the end, and look forward to those questions coming through. So I will be making forward-looking statements during this presentation, and no doubt during the Q&A session afterwards. Just as a reminder, on page three of the presentation, a lot of the exploration news that's been coming out of Ecuador has been from the main cordillera, so the belt that stretches from Sol Gold's Cascabel right in the north through to Lumina's Cangrejos porphyry gold project in the south. Our project area is in the red, in the southeastern part, the lower right of the country, up against the Peruvian border. And in the detail of that area on page four, our concession area up in the north, in the red block, Warintza has been in the news with Solaris's spectacular copper results out of that porphyry that's 15 kilometers off the sort of shoulder, the southern shoulder of our concession block. And crucially, Ecuador's two modern mines, the Mirador open pit copper mine and the Fruta del Norte gold mine put into production by Lundin, are in this belt, and there are a number of companies reporting really exciting results from this belt. So it's a gold and copper belt. You can see the sort of trend of the belt, and it trends right up into our concession area, which is close on 208,000 hectares or 500,000 acres. On page five, I just want to highlight that the management group in Toronto in Canada is pretty small. The key people are Ecuadorian. The main functions of this company on the ground are operated by Ecuadorians, and our only expat in country is John Paul Pallier, our VPX. Everything else is run by the Ecuadorian team, and we're very proud of that. On page six, we've got a lot of layers of data in our exploration program. Keith and I have both been involved in taking up grassroots or exploration areas that no one really knows too much about, working through them systematically and coming up with discoveries. And, you know, we're very cognizant of the fact that the brightest, shiniest thing very seldom is the biggest deposit. The biggest deposits tend to be, very often are quite sort of subtle features that show up through several layers of data. And, you know, that's the way we're approaching this exploration, in a very systematic way, using all of these layers of data. On page 7, you know, we're obviously a gold-orientated company by the name of the project, The Lost Cities. We are looking for those gold mines that were related to Logroño and Sevilla that were mined by the Spanish. But while we're doing that exploration, we are likely to pick up anything else that's in the area, and that's exactly what's happening, both with copper and on the silver zinc side. So where we're drilling at the moment is we've got two drill rigs operating right now. The smaller, lighter weight rig is in the Senken N1 target. That is a sedimentary copper silver target, and I'll talk about that in a sec. The second rig, which is a bigger rig, it's got capacity to drill down to about 1,500 meters, is on the Kuriyawi target, and we're down at about 950 meters, got a couple of hundred meters still to go on that. And, you know, what I would just like to draw your attention to is not only the right-hand side of the graphic where the various targets are lined up for drilling next, but the bottom right, where we've got a bunch of new things, where those are sort of jostling for priority to come into that drill plan. So, you know, a lot of work going on at the moment, and, you know, exciting target areas lining up to be drilled next. So on page 9, Tirio Shimpia is shown in red. It's a massive target area right in the middle of the concession block. Where the drill is turning right now, the lightweight rig is at Senken N1, also more or less in the middle of the concession block, and then Kuriyawi, where the bigger rig is, down towards the southeast. And, you know, it's a 90 kilometer long block by about 50 in the widest part of it. So a big concession area, all jungle covered. But we're focusing on very specific parts of that concession. So on page 10, our exploration model that we're using to guide our drilling of the second hole at Senken N1, these are the same vertical slice through the earth, and the shape of the different units is based on geological observation at surface. So in diagram A, that shows the shape of a lava seal that's shown in green, and it shows the location of our first borehole on the sedimentary copper, the hole number 1. And the significance of that hole is that it hit native copper right under that seal. So the pink rocks, and they're shown in the second diagram in the bottom as well, those are permeable rocks, and you know, these sandstones, the fluids flow around in those sandstones. But the green layer is an absolutely impermeable seal, like a concrete slab in the middle of that basin, and the fluids that are carrying the metals can't get through that seal. So the fact that we hit copper, pure copper, right under that seal, basically tells us that fluid that was traveling around that basin and moving around that basin has a lot of copper in it. And what we're looking for is where that copper can be stripped very efficiently out of that solution by sulfur. As soon as you mix copper and sulfur together, that's where you're going to develop the bigger, potentially bigger copper sulfide deposits that constitute most of the copper mines around the world. So we've got to get those two things together. We've got to get the copper to see, to interact with the sulfur-bearing fluid. And the graphic in the lower part of that diagram just shows the way the basin would have been 150 million years ago. And that seal that's made by the lava would also have trapped natural gas. And so we're sort of thinking in the same way that an oil exploration group would think. So we're looking at where the hydrocarbon, the oil, and the associated gas would have been trapped, and that's always trapped in the sort of arches in those folds, such as the ones that are defined by the lava seal. And so our second borehole, having hit native copper right at the bottom of one of those folds in hole number one, hole number two is going down on a higher part of that fold where we expect the gas, the sulfur-bearing hydrocarbon gas, to have been, and that would have interacted with the copper-bearing fluid, and hopefully it would have precipitated a significant amount of copper sulfide. So very, very specific target that we're drilling, and we're about 200 meters down on that hole, and aiming to go to about 400 meters or 450 meters. In Kuriyawi on page 11, this is a geophysical target. These are two vertical slices through the mobile MT geophysical data. The pink is the electrically conductive areas, so that pink layer along the surface in both of those profiles is today's weathering profile, because the rock weathers to clay, and clay is electrically conductive. But what we're interested in is what's happening below that. And that sort of finger-shaped pink area is a conductive thing. It's about a kilometer in diameter. It's about the size that one would expect a porphyry to be, and we would expect a mineralized porphyry to be a conductor as well. So that pink sort of finger, we believe, is a porphyry. That's what we're drilling. But then on the top profile, profile one, where there's that sort of chimney of warmer color going up from the porphyry target up to the sort of clay layer, we believe that's exactly where you would expect an epithermal to be. And so with the one drill hole, we plan to go down through the epithermal into the underlying porphyry. So that hole is about 950 meters depth at the moment, and stay tuned as to what we'll be saying about that shortly. So those two areas that I've just spoken about, Senken N1 and Kuriyawi, are where the two drill rigs are operating right now. Now, Tiriashimpia, which is the silver zinc target, we don't have a rig operating here yet, but we believe that this is our first discovery in the Lost Cities project. It is silver and zinc that we can see, we can touch. This is exposed at surface. It is a sedimentary hosted style of mineralization. And so we see the lead and zinc. It's zinc and silver dominated with a little bit of lead in it. We're seeing these layers of mineralization in the sedimentary layering and also focused around faults. So those black tadpoles in the vertical profile on the right-hand side, which shows the different sedimentary layers, that's where we're thinking of putting a couple of the first holes drill holes into this target area. But in the meantime, while we're waiting for the drill rig to get there, we are using a diamond saw to sample silver and zinc where it's exposed at surface. And that way, we can demonstrate continuity along trend and refine our drill targets a little bit better. So a couple more months of this very detailed sampling at surface, wherever that layer is visible beneath the jungle floor, and that is setting up for us drilling in this area in a couple of months' time. On the left-hand side, that graphic is... It just shows the extent of Tierra Olympia. It's 15 kilometers long, 10 miles long. And those little worms are where the these layers of mineralization reach the surface along the slopes of the mountains there. So each one of those layers is just the very edge of a layer where it's exposed along the edge of a mountain, and it would go in under the mountain. So we're lining up for the drilling on Tierra Olympia. Our objective in the short term is to demonstrate to you as shareholders that this is a discovery. We realize that that's a little bit of a process. We will be coming out with results shortly on this, as we indicated in the press release this morning. We're waiting on results, but the geologists are quite excited about what they saw in the field on a potential extension to this belt. So it's already 10 miles long. And we hinted in this morning's press release that pending these results that are in the lab at the moment, that it might get a little bit bigger than that. And if it does, we're really starting to look at a very, very big system here. On page 13, the Tierra Olympia area is fundamentally important in two ways. The first one is that, as I said, we believe that it represents our first discovery of silver zinc in the Lost Cities project. That's the first point. The second point is that it is sediment hosted. And in the Kupferschiefer, which is our model of sediment-hosted copper, the giant deposit that runs between the eastern part of Germany and into Poland, and also the Zambian copper belt between Zambia and Zaire or the Congo, there is this sort of transition in the metals from zinc through lead to copper. And we are pretty excited about the concept that Tierra Olympia could very well be the zinc end member of sediment-hosted copper. In other words, now that we know where to look for the zinc, because we've seen it in outcrop, we know which sedimentary layers it's actually in, we need to move laterally within that same package of sediments to other areas where those same sediments, that same layer, might very well host sediment-hosted copper mineralization. So Tierra Olympia is right in the middle of our concession area, but it's right central in our exploration thinking at this stage. So we're a good exploration geologist is learning every day of their life, and that's certainly the case with us in the field. Pretty exciting times. And then taking the sedimentary copper concept of the Kupferschiefer and the Zambian copper belt, on page 14, you can see that we swung for the fence. We recognized that the sedimentary hosted copper tends to be in the same sedimentary layers over hundreds of kilometers as it is in the Kupferschiefer and the Zambian copper belt. obviously not mineralized all the time or consistently, but the mineralization is in specific sites within that same sedimentary layer. And because this happens on a scale of hundreds of kilometers, we've taken up or applied for a large land position in Peru. And there, a huge advantage that we have in that area is that there's an enormous amount of free data from the oil industry. You could see from some of our graphics where we're talking about the drilling at Senk and N1, that we are thinking very much along the lines that the way an oil geologist would think, looking for where the oil and the gas would accumulate. Well, those same oil companies did a lot of seismic, which is a geophysical process that provides you a sort of X-ray of the shape of the area, the rocks below surface. And it's very good at defining where those folds are and where those gas and oil traps would be. That's why they do this, use this method of geophysics. And we're using exactly that same data, looking for the same trap locations, but tying that in and coming at it from a metals point of view. So we can use the seismic to know where the oil would have accumulated, and using our knowledge of the sources of copper to say, okay, that is the area in which the copper would combine with the hydrocarbons, the sulfur in the oil and gas. So it's a broad approach, but we're doing desktop studies that are using this free data that is allowing us to really, really focus in on the best places to have boots on the ground as soon as those concessions are granted to us. And then just on page 15, I mean, you know, we're cashed up. We raised 9 million Canadian right in the beginning of April. And we need that cash to keep two rigs operating. In fact, we're thinking of potentially bringing in a very lightweight rig to look to investigate Tiria Shimpia as well. We raised that cash because we wanted to be conservative. We know that we are on the brink of making a discovery and hopefully a second and possibly third one in the Lost Cities area, and we had to be cashed up for that to allow our exploration teams to be focused on discovery. Fully diluted, we're still nice and tight, 56 million shares outstanding. And cashed up and good to go. So on page 16, just very briefly in summary, two rigs turning, and we expect good things from those rigs. But in fact, what we believe is our first discovery is not yet being drilled, because we have more work to do on the surface. And that sampling with the diamond saws to make very, very good quality sampling is being done right at the moment. And we'll be reporting on those results as we go forward, including a potential increase to the size of that system. So incredibly exciting time in this company, and we absolutely look forward to some good results going forward, and a lot of excitement. And just, you know, the final thing is that Keith and I are in the undergrowth a lot of the time. Both of us are just back from Ecuador. I'm now in Toronto, having spent 3 months in Ecuador, and Keith was down there for a long time as well. And Carolyn is always the best person, the most reliable person to be able to find us, which she does. And so anything that's unclear or anything where you need a bit more info, please just contact Carolyn, and she'll get the message through to us. So with that, I'd like to open it up for questions, and we'll do our best to answer them. Thanks very much.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. To join the question queue, you may press star, then 1 on your telephone keypad. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing any keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. We will pause for a moment as callers join the queue. Our first question comes from Mark Reichman from Noble Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hello, and thank you for the presentation. I wanted to go back to slide 8, if we could, and I just wanted to clarify a couple things. On that slide, could you talk a little bit about like how many holes you expect to drill at each of those targets and kind of the timing? You know, do you think you'll be at Senken West by, you know, July? And then where at what point would you bring a third rig in?
Mark, thanks very much, and good to hear you on the call. Mark, the timing really just depends on it depends on a number of things, but Senken West, we should be drilling there in under a month or so. Chiriashimpia, you mentioned a third rig. We're actually looking at bringing in a very, very lightweight rig there that can just punch, short holes, 10, 20, 30, 50 meters, where we see the layers of mineralization close to surface, and we just want to start getting a third dimension on this. So, hopefully Chiriashimpia will be drilling in, let's say, just over 2 months' time. And then, on the second rig, the bigger rig, we're drilling Kuriyawi, which is a combination between the mobile MT, that pretty compelling target that it came up with. But in fact, on the same sort of concession area and in the same sort of geophysical block, the geophysicists were really excited about two other targets that they thought were porphyries, and as soon as we finished it at Kuriyawi, we will probably drill a second hole there on Kuriyawi 1, and then from there move on to onto the two other sort of porphyry targets in that area. So another month or so on Kuriyawi on a second hole there, and then starting to drill those other porphyries. But this is all subject to change, as we say in the top line of that graphic, because there are new targets that are jostling up, and but we're focused on the areas where we believe we can make a discovery most quickly.
Thank you very much.
Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then one. Our next question comes from Terence Ortsland from PSO. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the presentation, Richard. Just a technical question before I start. Can you define the technical capability of the rigs? When you say a light one and a bigger one, what are we talking about in terms of the depth that they may go to? Like, what kind of rigs are these?
Terry, the light one, it can go down to about 700 meters, we pushed it to 722 meters, which was, literally as far as it could go on the first hole at Senken N1. It depends on the ground conditions. If the hole is nice and stable and there's no sort of rock chips falling into it, then, that light rig could potentially go to 800 meters or so. But then the bigger rig that's at Kuriyawi, that should be able to get down to 1,500 meters pretty easily.
And who are the contractors again? Remind me, please.
It's Kloane Drilling out of Whitehorse. It's a family owned operation, but all the drillers in Ecuador are local Ecuadorians, and We've used Plan Air for about 20 years. We know them. We know the Trillers, and they do an outstanding job.
Thanks for that. Just remind me, please, Richard and Keith. Triashimpia, the 15-kilometer strike. You defined it by surface mapping and walking all through, I assume, and through geophysics. And are there any other spots on this strike that which are more accessible and closer to surface demineralization?
Well, I can answer that. The mineralization comes to surface. Of course, it's in heavy jungle, so it's not contiguous the whole way. And there are places where we see it exposed on hillsides, so we can see that it's there's multiple layers here. At the end of the day, we don't know how many layers. We don't know the ultimate thicknesses of each layer. We're going to have to drill it, and the drilling, well, I really want to hit this thing as hard as we can and get the maximum bang for the buck here. So that's why we're kind of investigating how we're going to drill it right now with a very lightweight rig. So we can drill the areas where it appears to be thickest and richest, and make some headway in the markets. I mean, you know, we're a public company, so we need to put our best foot forward here.
I realize that. Let me. I think there's some feedback coming in from the shareholders saying that, and probably that's not bad news, that these things will shape out to be more underground and open pit in due course, in a mining production sense. I mean, the world is going towards underground because of the environmental sensitivity and so on and so forth. But, of course, Ruta del Norte is a decline. So, and here, with the depth we're talking about, approximately close to 500, 300, 400 meters. Am I right? In the Triashimpia? We can get the cartoon here.
Well, that's all conjecture, right? We don't know what the subsurface looks like, but I think it would probably be mostly room and pillar, an underground situation. It wouldn't be a massive open pit going for 15 Ks or even 5 Ks or anything like that. The copper, silver, and sediments may even be amenable to solution mining. As long as it's done in a responsible way, I think that would be a much better approach rather than strip mining the area, certainly. But, you know, each one of these things we'll have to tackle, on an individual basis. I think that, as you say, the world has moved on, and nobody likes to see great big scars of open pits. And I think a lot of the movement in the industry will go towards block cave in the porphyry sense. But each one of these things is different and structurally different. And we'll have to get the engineers in or whoever comes after us and appraise them on an individual basis.
I realize that. I mean, the profile of the ore body, if it's the way it is, you're going to be doing shafts everywhere. In fact, that's what happens in DRC. Multiple shafts is the way to go, and that will access you for the ore, for the sedimentary deposits. The question actually was that you are focusing this particular area, and
mm-hmm.
you can focus the entire strike length if you want to, but I don't know about the topography and also drainage and everything else. Are just the easiest areas to tackle from the point of view of discovery? You're already there. You got to do it. I understand that. But later on, once you have a discovery, then what do you do?
Well, it's not our idea, Terry, to bring any of these things in production. As I've said repeatedly, we either get a partner or we sell it off with JV at whatever, but we're not miners. We're exploration people. So I want to take it to a certain extent. Looking back at the Aurelian days with Fruta del Norte, if we wanted to convert that resource into the reserve, a bankable reserve on Fruta del Norte, where we're looking at $150 million, and that was just starch. And Kinross ended up spending more than $200 million. We're not going to get hung up on all this yet. Obviously, it's always in the back of our minds how would somebody eventually mine these things. But 15 kilometers is one hell of a strike length. And it's going to take some time to find where the hottest areas are. I can't tell you today if Irani is going to be doing that or not. Maybe we drill a couple of nice areas and we have some nice hits, and then a major wants to come in and partner up with us and we spend their money. Just stay tuned and watch this space, as they say.
Terry, yeah. The other thing is that, there is the area where the veins and the sediment-hosted stuff, the silver zinc is located, is pretty wild to topography, steep hills and that kind of thing. But it's adjacent to an area where there is flat land, there is room for a processing site, logistics and all that kind of thing. It's not in the middle of the mountains. There are some reasonably flat areas around that are easy access for thinking of the future.
Yeah, understood. Keith, you always, Richard, always put some teasers in the press release about, I'm looking at just before the Peruvian at 93-41 headline, you have the Lost Cities. You still got crews hunting around the old workings and all? The cavity that you reported for the Lost Cities?
Terry, yeah, there's some strange cavities and collapsed areas that just don't look natural. They're very close to where we've published those, put out those press releases of the roads that we've spotted in the LIDAR, and there's no question that those are roads and beautifully engineered. We've got roads going through the Tiriashimpia area, and then these very, very strange looking cavities. Limestones do have a lot of natural caves in them, but these cavities don't look natural. Can we prove that they're mines yet? No. We will not let anyone in there to go underground on them because they're just not stable enough. And of course, there are all these bat-borne diseases and that kind of thing. So it's something that we're looking at very carefully, but we're trying to just not go in there like cowboys. We're very careful of people's health. We've got to make sure that they collapsed holes in the ground. That's the best way of describing them. They're quite big, and they're right where the veins are, and where the mineralization is in the sediments. They're in exactly the right spot, and they look like mines, but. Can we prove that yet? No, not yet. But they don't look natural. That's all I can say. So now that the geos know what to sort of look for, they're looking for more of these things. And I'm sure that if they are old mine structures, we'll find lots more of them.
Yeah, understood. You're doing the 43-101 on the Peruvian side. You picked up five more concessions. So that that will be also covered by 43-101, I assume, because you're underway for the 43-101. So 5-minute consent just got picked up, correct, very recently?
No, Terry, those are the applications that have been in the pipeline since the beginning, and now they're proper concessions.
Okay. So the purpose of doing 43-101 is because of purposes of exactly what you're planning or what you do on the property. Am I right? And that's part of the requirements for the concession?
No. It just gives us some flexibility from a corporate point of view as to, you know, how we might handle that a little bit down the road. So it's just putting a couple of things in place to make sure that we have some corporate flexibility on it.
Okay, got it. I missed up the fact that these are all the applications that became concessions. Thanks for that. And I had another question on the Kuriawe. So you were answering the question earlier that this is the eighth hole of the four. You had seven scout drilling holes in this. This is the eighth hole that will be completed. Am I right?
Correct.
And this is a big machine that's going to go 1,200 meters. So how's the core recovery in that target? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, it's pretty good. It's excellent.
Okay. Well, thanks for this. Thanks for that. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Terry.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from James Bryson, private investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, Richard. Hi, Keith. Thanks very much for your presentation today. I was just kind of curious that in the past it was explained that the sedimentary copper beds, that copper might have dropped out of solution with contact in carbon. And Kuriawe, which looks really exciting, you have found bitumen or carbon in that drill core. Is there a relationship in gold maybe precipitating out because of the carbon in that?
We're hoping. Yeah.
Me too.
Quite often when you see carbon in epithermal systems, it does mean that there's gold. It's not a one-to-one correlation. I want to stress that. But it has been seen in and I've spoken about this before, McLaughlin in California is probably the most well-known example where there's hydrocarbon in the epithermal veins, and that was a very rich mine of homestakes. It's now exhausted.
Okay,
James. Sorry, if I could just add to that. So the carbon that we're seeing with the copper, you know, where we've shown quite spectacular photographs. That is from the sediment-hosted copper at surface, and that it's a very important point that you raise, because under today's weathering, with the slightly sort of acidic rainwater that's naturally acidic, and the humic acids from the compost that's on surface, that slightly acidic fluid would leach copper from the surface, from this first 10, 50 meters, something like that. And the only reason that we've seen that copper in outcrop is because the carbon fragments from old plants and fossilized plants is basically strong enough to keep that copper bound there. Without that carbon, that copper would have been leached, and we would have been walking along the surface without realizing that there was sedimentary hosted copper potential within this area. So it's a fundamental point that you raise. And then, you know, to go just to reiterate what Keith was saying about the it's a different kind of carbon. It's oil generated carbon that we're seeing in the veins in Kuriawe. You know, the the carbon and we're talking about methane and all those carbon bearing gases that go with oil. If they are traveling in the same fluid that gold is traveling in, that fluid, that hydrocarbon can cause, and that hydrocarbon gas can cause the gold to come out of solution very, very efficiently. And that's exactly what you want to form a deposit. You want that gold to be concentrated as much as possible so that you've got high enough grade that it's economic. So, you know, the fact that there is these sort of vestiges of that, you know, old oil effectively in the veins is a good sign that if there's gold in that system, it should have dropped out quite efficiently with the oil.
Super. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then one. This concludes the question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to Dr. Richard Spencer for any closing remarks.
Thanks very much, Sharon. Just in closing, I think we've just got to reiterate that this is a company that's funded. It's got a phenomenal concession package that in Ecuador hasn't been explored to our knowledge since the colonial Spanish times. We have two drills turning, and we have in the one project where we don't have a drill turning yet, we've got diamond sores turning at surface to get really good quality samples for us to get into the lab. So we're pushing on three fronts on three high priority targets, and we're, I think, poised on at the edge of making a very significant discovery in this project area. And thank you very much for your time and attendance. And Keith, anything that you want to add?
No, just to say that, as I said earlier, watch this space. There will be a really good news flow coming through. And I'm particularly interested to see what happens with these saw cuts out of Chiriashimpia. It's going to be very, very exciting.
Thanks very much, everyone. Thanks for your time and attendance. Take care.
Bye.
This concludes today's conference call. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating and have a pleasant day.